The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. It is 3 minutes past nine, approaching 4 minutes past nine on this Wednesday. It's the 24th of June. And once again, we're able to say we're broadcasting from a beautiful northwest of Ireland. I heard on the National Weather Forecast them talking of overcast conditions in the northwest. Are you having a giggle? It's absolutely beautiful here. I hope it's lovely wherever you are, and I hope it is putting a bit of a pep in your step and you're having nice weather wherever you're listening to us from. Right, our lines are open for you right now. 086 60 25000, that's the WhatsApp and the text number, 086 60 25000. You can also call us, of course, on 074 91 25000, or if email is your preferred form of contact, well, that's comments@highlandradio.com. and just to invite you to watch the program if you wish. We present this visually for you every single day here, and you can watch it on your smart TV, your Fire Stick, your streaming device. Just go to the YouTube app, search Highland Radio Ireland, and lo and behold, we pop up there on your big screen. You can take us with us, take us with you on your mobile devices as well, on YouTube, Facebook, etc. The Finn Valley Voice is out this morning. Don't link Mean Bog Wind Farm to National Grid. That's Commissioner Planala stating that. Plans to link the troubled Mean Bog Wind Farm at Barnesmore Gap to the National Grid have again been dashed. The link is dependent on the construction of three new culverts, water tunnels beneath the N15 from Torna Woolley Mountain. But Donegal County Council has denied permission for the construction, and Commissioner Planala has now confirmed that decision. Mid Cork Electrical Limited, developers of that wind farm, had appealed the decision of Donegal County Council. The development has been in the news since the massive peat slide of 2020, which dumped thousands of tons of acidic peat into the Mourne Beg and Shruangarve water systems, causing immense damage to wildlife and threatening drinking water supplies. Do you remember that footage of the bog sliding? It was something otherworldly. Good morning to you, Deneen, watching in New Zealand. Thanks very much for tuning in. And Dolores, much closer to home. Dolores, I hope you are doing well where you're watching us from, hopefully at home. Right, on to the Nationals now, and more confirmation of what the Israeli forces have been responsible for. And it's been confirmed now by a UN inquiry that children in Gaza, children just like our children, just like the young ones heading to their summer camps today and all that, were deliberately targeted by Israelis. Deliberately targeted. Israeli authorities and security forces deliberately targeted Palestinian children, resulting in genocide, crimes against humanity, and war crimes in Gaza and war crimes in the occupied West Bank, an independent UN inquiry said on Tuesday. The report by the UN Independent International Commission of Inquiry on the occupied Palestinian territory included East Jerusalem and Israel and examined violations against Palestinian children since the start of the war between Israel and Hamas on October 7th, 2023. War is despicable. No one wants to see any war, but believe it or not, even between Ukraine and Russia, that ongoing war, there are rules of engagement. And for the most part, even though we hear of breaches of that, for the most part, those rules of engagement are generally respected. The no-no, the one thing you would never, ever do purposefully, surely to God, no matter what your differences, is to target children. Yet Israel did. A previous report by the commission in September found that Israel had committed genocide in Gaza and that top Israeli officials, including Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, incited these acts, accusations that Israel called scandalous. I'm not too pushed on what Israel has to say about it, because it's as plain as the nose on my face what's going on over there. A young man has appeared in court in connection with the deaths of a mother and her young daughter in a car crash. Nurse Natalie McLaughlin and daughter Ella were killed following a two-vehicle collision at Glen Toher outside Carndonagh on the evening of July 2nd, 2025. Ella, who was 6 years old, died at the scene, while her mother Natalie, who was 27, died the following day at the Royal Victoria Hospital in Belfast. Ms. McLaughlin's boyfriend, Tyrone, in his 30s at the time of the incident, and the couple's other daughter, Rhea Rose, who was aged just 20 months, were also injured in the crash. Lachlan Doherty, 18, appeared before Buncrana District Court yesterday in connection with the deaths. The accused of Doe Moore, Clonmany, County Donegal, is charged with a total of 8 offences. Members of the McLaughlin family stood outside the courthouse holding pictures of Natalie, Ella and Rhea. Sergeant Charlene Anderson of Buncrana Garda Station outlined the arrest of Doherty yesterday on Main Street, Buncrana. Sergeant Anderson listed out all the charges and added that the accused did not make any reply to any of them. An incredibly difficult situation for the family. We wish them all strength. And there's 2 families affected by that as well. A very difficult time. But our thoughts are with the bereaved and her loved ones, both of them, in fact. The majority of parents with children in single-sex primary schools want them to change to co-educational, a survey of over 200,000 households has found. Now, in Donegal, 98.1% of parents surveyed, I think it's up there, one of the highest in the country, if not the highest in the country, certainly in the top 3 or 4. The majority of parents of children in single-sex primary schools want them changed to co-educational. Now, why would they, I'm a bit ignorant to this, why would there be single-sex in the first place? Why, if this is the will of the people, hasn't it changed already? Maybe it's more complicated than I understand. But the full results of the Department of Education's primary school survey, which took the views of parents, teachers and boards of management, were published yesterday. The survey asked parents of children attending primary school and parents of children yet to enter the school system what were their preferences on school patronage and ethos, co-educational or single-sex provision, and whether they wanted teaching through Irish. The results relating to every specific school in the country went to individual schools last week and have now been published online alongside a national summary report. We might dig that out, Caroline, if that's okay, on the website, because I wasn't aware that it's been made public. So it'd be interesting to see what individual schools here are thinking. The HSC could not provide details relating to the cost of treatment. This is, by the way, 27 Irish men have been fitted with bionic penises to treat erectile dysfunction. As I say, the HSC could not provide details relating to the cost of the treatment, but private clinics in Britain advertised prices exceeding €17,500, suggesting the cost of the 27 procedures could amount to just under €500,000. The HSC could not provide details relating to the cost of the treatment, but private clinics, I've just mentioned that, sorry. So a total of 27 men have been fitted with the bionic penises as a treatment for erectile dysfunction in public hospitals during the past 4 years. The surgical implants, devices also known as penile prosthesis, can be manually inflated and allow men to do what they might need to do. Now, the one thing I noticed about this story is that there was a bit of giggling going on. Not here, I'm on about online, a bit of giggling going on. Now, I don't know the ins and outs of why someone might require that treatment, but I presume it might be for the same reason that post-cancer surgery, for an example, women might get augmentation surgery at the same time. It's about body image and how you feel about yourself. And, you know, I just have noticed a little bit of a conversation online suggesting that this is a waste of money. And I think using the word bionic, really, it's a tube. It's a cylinder that's inflated. But presumably it is to address issues about how you can function in life, how you feel in life as well, and a lot of scrutiny about the cost of it. And I just wonder, is that a little bit fair? Is it fair, really? I don't know. What do you think? If you've any view in relation to that, 086 60 25,000. And lastly, in the Irish Daily Star, reports of intimate image abuse in Ireland surged by 66% in 25, with children and young people aged under 24 accounting for nearly half of all victims. We've heard of stories locally of images being doctored and the terrible impact it has on children and families. You would think, too, with the stricter laws, more awareness in 26, we'd see a retraction in these types of instances, but it's not the case. We're seeing more and more of these cases. Now, according to new data published by the Irish Internet Hotline, a total of 862 cases were recorded last year, up from 519 in the previous year. So it could be about awareness. This has prompted the launch of a national safety campaign aimed at protecting vulnerable teenagers from this growing digital threat. Of the total, 13% involved children under the age of 18, while victims aged 18 to 24 made up a further 35% of all cases. While navigating the online landscape, sorry, I can't string my words together, can feel like walking through a minefield, the new It's Not the End of the World campaign is stepping up to show young victims a practical way out. And the thing is it's important to have a situation whereby a young person can tell you about it, or if you are a young person, to tell someone close to you in your life, you are the victim in that situation. And the more people that report, perhaps maybe the less we'll see of it. As you would know, we talk about road safety quite a lot on this programme, and particularly road safety outside schools. An awful lot of roads have been developed, upgraded out alongside schools. It's not like the schools were built along these very fast roads. Often the school predates the upgrades to the road. And you know what happens when a road's upgraded, particularly if it's nice and straight? Well, people put the foot down. Today we're going to focus on Skull Breed in Letamacha Ward. And the principal of that school is Kieran McDevitt, and he joins me now. Good morning to you, Kieran.
Greg, how are you doing?
I'm good. And in terms of safety outside your school, Kieran, it's almost like the perfect storm, isn't it? It's a decent stretch of road and it's very, very straight, and your school is just right on the side of it.
It is, yeah. We have a good road here through Letcher, right, thank God. And, unfortunately, speeding has become an issue probably here very noticeably, I would say, maybe since Easter more so, with increased traffic and a lot of camper vans, a lot of motorbikes on the road. And for some reason, there's a broken white line outside the school here through a 60-kilometre zone. So there is overtaking going on, and that can be dangerous at times. And yeah, especially, obviously, morning and evening times when the children are coming or going home from school.
Yeah, I'm looking at the images of it, and it is really quite remarkable because it's a single white line, isn't it? And then just as you really are getting into the pull-in section of the school, it turns to a double, a broken white line, which for motorists, that's green light, effectively.
Aye, exactly. Yeah, and it's a nice long straight stretch of road, so it's probably, it doesn't help. Maybe there's a broken line, definitely, yeah. And the signs, they're quite small, the 60 km/h signs along the road here. So if they're a wee bit bigger, maybe, or something like that, it would probably help, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, there are the usual signs that are there for school and all that kind of stuff. But if you're approaching the school, you can't really see it until you're right up on top of it, if you know, on the long stretch of road.
Yeah. Yeah, they could be definitely be a wee bit more noticeable. And the flashing lights, we have either side of the school here as well. Somebody actually said to me the other day that they didn't even notice. They've never seen them working. Now, they are working, but they're quite dim now, so I don't know whether that's a matter of bulbs or what it is exactly, but they could definitely be a wee bit more eye-catching right now, yeah.
Yeah. What kind of message was coming from the recent meeting, Kieran, in terms of, you know, what the stakeholders think could be a solution to these issues?
We had a meeting there a couple of weeks ago up in the hall here locally, and we had a good crowd at it. And Councillor Brian Carr was out as well there, and he was very good, and he filled us in on some of the, there was a survey done, I think it's a traffic survey over a week long period. I think it's 2 years ago now, or almost 2 years ago. And I might have my figures wrong, Brian will correct me on it, but the highest speed recorded on this stretch of road was, I think, something like 125 km/h and 128 km/h going in the other direction. Mm. The average speed, I think, was 80 km/h over the week. So again, that's 20 km higher than the limit is. So that obviously shocked anyone that was at the meeting. It was disappointing now to hear, because it's not just the school, like, it's a built-up area. We have Clerkens filling station up the road from us. There's the health centre up the road from us. There's a housing estate. And there's people coming and going. There's a cycle track as well, obviously, which is great. Mm. It's off the road, obviously, but you know, it is a busy area.
Yeah,
especially during the summertime.
It's just a really long stretch of road.
To slow down.
Even with the service station in and of itself, you know, that's there all of the time, and people have to pull in and out of that as well too. So that's
and kind of as you're coming at it, we'll say from the Glenties end, from the Glebire Bridge side, you come over a height down into the city, so it's kind of a blind height.
Yes, I see that.
So you could actually be coming over that hill from the Glenties end, and a car could be coming up from the Dunlow side, and you actually wouldn't see them until you've crested the hill, if you know what I mean. Mm. So all I would say is to please slow down.
In relation to the school itself, pick-up, drop-off time, what's the situation there? I mean, there is some space at the front of the school to accommodate.
There is. It can be busy enough in the morning here. And we start at 9:20 and we have a Nina going since September, thank God, and they started 9:00. So before we went back to school in September there, I just asked the parents of the school children here to not drop their children to school before 9:10 and to give the Nina pupils a chance and the parents a chance, to be in and gone.
Trying to stagger the traffic as much as possible. Yeah, You mentioned Councillor Brian Carr. He joins us now, if the Sinn Féin party has to be said. Again, we're in a situation here where we're trying to avoid what almost feels like inevitable, a close shave or death or serious injury. Brian, this is the N56, though, so it sounds to me like this is going to be ping-ponging between the council and the TAI before we even start.
Yeah, good morning, Greg. Good morning to all the listeners. And Kieran there outlined it very well. This is nearly like deja vu at this stage, because it was on a few weeks ago talking to you about Fintown, and now we have Letcher McAward in the same situation. It's since the upgrade, since the village got the complete new upgrade, the N56 upgrade, the speed has become a major, major issue. And the Letcher McAward Development Group has been banging this drum for a number of years, and that was them that called the meeting last week. And as Kieran said, it was a very good meeting. We all went, we had our say, and I had a report from the TII, and the two speeds was right, 125, 130. And as you said, the measures now are, like, I've been in the council 2 years and have brought it up numerous occasions, as other councillors have. We've trying to get the signage. The signage is too small coming into to Letcher McAward Village. It has to be the proper gateway signs. The speed limit review is going on at the moment, and we're waiting for the results of the speed limit review. But as councillors, we sat at a workshop 3 weeks ago, and we were given an update of what is, you know, a rough update of how things are going to work. And Letcher McAward, the speed limit is going to stay at 60, because, as you said, it's a national primary road. So we will be fighting with TAA, council and everything, but we're all going to work together to hopefully to get some kind of proper traffic plan for Letcher McAward. Through the speed limit review, there's new periodic speed limit signs going to be going up outside national schools within urban areas. So if, like they are in Letcher McAward, that they're in the 60, there'll be speed limits going up, reducing the speed limit from 60 down to 30 for school times, morning and afternoon. So that will, you know,
Is that going to happen outside the school?
It's going to happen outside all schools within town boundaries.
So is this school within the town boundaries?
Within the urban review.
Is this school?
It's within the speed limits. Right. It's within the speed limits.
So
it'll be happening. Hopefully it wasn't on the plan that day when we were down, but I noticed it and I asked them to review it. So they're reviewing it, and that will be added in.
Right. So, Kieran,
periodic speed limits.
I mean, is that the solution then, Kieran? If you are getting flashing signs that point to a reduced speed limit,
it's only a small solution, Greg.
I'm just putting this to Kieran. Kieran. I mean, does that go far enough in your view, Kieran?
Well, I suppose it'd be help, Greg. Anyway, but again, I would just say, when you get into a car, you decide what speed you're going to travel at. So it's a personal choice.
With respect, though, Kieran, I've kind of given up on people's better judgment. It seems to be you have to put physical measures in place or actual enforcement, you know, like a squad car outside that school once a week, either in the...
Maybe it'd be no harm,
just park it there.
Rumble strips or something like that would be a big help, I would think, personally.
But, Brian, in relation to that, this might as well be, if the truth be told, from a TAI perspective, this might as well be the Ballyshannon to Bundoran bypass. They're not going to be putting rumble strips on it, are they?
Well, that was one of the things that was mentioned. And Kieran himself, if he wants to tell you, he came up with a fantastic idea. Once you cross the Guibarra Bridge, there's two signs saying 60. You can barely see them. Mm. Kieran came up with the idea. But the situation is rumble strips, for repeater signs. And one of the things that came out of the meeting was we'd do some kind of a visual impact of, and then within a week, Kieran had the children of the school with a lovely big sign, "Slow Gamal," and standing outside the school with a 60-kilometre signs in each one of those hands, you know, please asking people to slow down. And it is the behaviour.
It is, but I mean, obviously, right at the beginning of the conversation, Kieran talked about how, you know, it's gotten worse because there's more traffic. That's not local traffic, you see. That was a fantastic initiative by the children. But if you're not from this area, as I say, you come around that bend and you look at that unbroken line and people will put their foot down and they won't necessarily be from the area.
And the thing that came up at one of our roads SPCs and the special meeting that we had on road safety was these fixed cameras. Now, from the start of the speed limit in Letterimer Ward to the end of the speed limit is 2.1 kilometres. So that's a perfect length for one of those fixed speed cameras. Make sure that you stay at your 60 kilometres an hour. And as soon as you see those anywhere throughout the country now, you do slow down and you will travel under that speed limit until you pass those signs again. Yeah. But this is a perfect example of Letterimer Ward would be a fantastic place for a village because it's 2.1 kilometres long to put in one of those fixed speed cameras and do the average
speed. I'm not being cynical, Brian, but we don't have them anywhere in this county. And achievable though in the short term. I'm not criticising you or the council, Brian, but there are dozens of these schools around this county. Why does the council not commission an audit of these schools, identify them themselves, and actually be proactively working on it rather than waiting for children to have to draw up go slow signs? Because we're playing whack-a-mole right around the county. We should know where every one of these schools are and be actively campaigning and engaging with the TII. That's what the local authority and its members are for, I would argue. Actively campaigning with the TII for all of schools, rather than us going from Dunkaneely to Fintown to Lurgybrack. You know where I'm coming from. Like, is that not what the role of the local... how many of this are you? 37? And there's a staff up there.
37, yeah.
You know, it's one of the biggest employers in the county. Like, why are principals and kids and local communities having to come out and bat for themselves all of the time? Do an audit of all of these schools across the region and, you know, commission whatever reports are required and make a proper submission to the TAI in this regard.
Yeah, no, you're 100% correct, Greg. And that's what the speed limit review is starting to do now. It's starting to highlight these areas have been highlighted to councillors for down through years and years. But now the speed limit review is maybe going to implement some precautions that may help to start off. As I said, the periodic speed limits at school times is going to be a massive help throughout the whole county. So the rural towns and villages are going to be done now, and later the schools in the countryside is going to be done next year. So it's a rolling improvement, but it's slow, and we need to get it hurried up. But Letterimer Ward, at the moment, as I said, the community development group have been banging this drum for a long, long time, and we will keep pushing. And this went to the TIA last year, and I spoke on it in Dublin, and I'll be going back to Dublin, the TIA, this year again to speak on this issue, plus other issues. Mm. There's so many, as you said there, you named so many different schools like Frosses, Down Crawley. There's speed issues everywhere throughout the county, Greg.
Yeah, the TIA developed these roads outside the schools, it has to be said, and I think they need to be reminded of that. And we need the roads, don't get me wrong, but it's they decide where they go and they maintain them and what safety measures, if any, are there. So just to be absolutely clear, Brian, you're telling us that in terms of Lettermark Award and potentially other schools within town boundaries, all of those schools are going to get periodic digital signs that, in other words, in the morning and the afternoon, they will have temporary speed limits.
30 kilometres.
All of them will.
Yes, they will flash. Yeah, all the schools within, the urban areas, take Glenties Town, for example, the main street will be reduced to 30 kilometres all the time. But the National School, which is on a 50-kilometre road, during the school hours, they will get periodic reduced to 30 kilometres an hour for those times of schools. Okay. And that's what's been rolled out throughout the county.
All right. Kieran McDevitt, perhaps I'm too dismissive of people's goodwill. Just to reiterate, you know, we decide how we drive. You know, we don't have blind ignorance. Kieran, you're again appealing for people to just to think twice, don't overtake there. Drive a little bit slower and just think of the terrible consequences, not only for someone you might hit, but for yourself if there were a collision.
Aye, exactly, Greg, that's it. Yeah, just slow down, slowing down won't kill you. Speed kills, as they say, but that's all I would appeal to people. And I want to thank Brian for all his help and information he gave us at the meeting. And please God, something good will come out of it, yeah.
Fingers crossed. Both of you.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Kieran. Kieran McDevitt, Principal of Skull Breed and Lettermark Award, and also we heard from Councillor Brian Carr. Now, following the recent passing of the baby loss certificate regulations in the Northern Ireland Assembly, baby loss certificates are now available to anyone in Northern Ireland who's experienced a loss prior to the end of their 24 weeks pregnancy. Melissa Crockett is National Bereavement Care Pathway Manager with SANS Northern Ireland and joins me on the programme now. Good morning to you, Melissa.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And while it might seem obvious, why was there this campaign for baby loss certificates and how long and ongoing was it?
So this actual scheme started in England a number of years ago and then moved on to Scotland. And just recently, as you said, it's been passed within Northern Ireland. For so many brave parents, this scheme will give official acknowledgement and recognition of their baby's existence. And we at SANS and all bereavement charities know that that acknowledgement can be a really significant part to any bereaved parent's journey and help them navigate their grief. So this validation that they now have that their babies existed outside sometimes the hospital setting as such, and that they matter. So this is the important thing here.
Yeah, and there wasn't any formal recognition up until now for losses before 20 weeks in pregnancy. And I suppose what this does now, it facilitates those that want them, and for others maybe their approach might be different, but the option is there.
Yes, it's all about options. We recognise that, you know, these certificates may not be for anyone, but for everyone, but for those who really want them, they are available. If you experienced a pregnancy loss under 24 weeks where you didn't receive a stillbirth certificate or a death certificate for your little baby, you can now apply for this. Now, that's under 24 weeks if your loss occurred after 1992. It's actually under 28 weeks if your loss occurred before 1992, because at 1992, the definition of a stillbirth actually changed.
Melissa, other than, and this is not in any way to belittle it, but does the baby loss certificate, in of course, the very important matter of for validating that the baby existed, does it offer anything else to the mum or parents?
So you mean in terms of a legal recognition?
Yes, I don't know. Yeah, again, it's an open-ended question because I don't really know what the implications could have been.
Yeah. So the scheme unfortunately doesn't offer any legal recognition as such. It is an acknowledgement certificate, but that in itself, for these families are dealing with this grief on their own a lot of the time. And having this acknowledgement now allows them to start those conversations about their little ones. We know that from the minute a woman and a partner and their partner get pregnant and see those blue lines on a pregnancy test, they start to think years ahead. And all of that is lost, essentially, whenever you lose a pregnancy. Now, we are by no means saying that these certificates will alleviate the pain of losing a pregnancy, but we really do feel, and parents have told us, and we have listened to the parents say for a number of years, that this will matter to them.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And I've spoken to so many women in the past that it's trying to get the point across that this was their baby. This was the loss is felt so deeply. I'm not sure what the situation is in the Republic of Ireland. I don't believe we have this. But what I will say is, if very sadly, someone from the Republic, if their baby was born in Northern Ireland, I believe that's the basis of this scheme, that they can apply for one of these certificates. So I'm thinking of maybe, you know, out in a Galvin Hospital or what have you. But it would be lovely to see this extended all-Ireland, Melissa.
Yes, I know that. I think there has been communications between the government, the government had communications with England when they initiated the scheme. So hopefully it will be in development. But yes, you're right. At the minute, those who can apply for the scheme are those who live in Northern Ireland, those who have experienced their loss within Northern Ireland, who may have been visiting Northern Ireland at the time that they've experienced their loss, and also those who lived in Northern Ireland at the time of their loss, but maybe no longer live in Northern Ireland. As you rightly said, within the Western Trust and within the Southern Trust, those being bordering counties as such, we probably will see ladies families from the Republic of Ireland applying for these certificates as well.
Yeah, and what this is about too is doing anything you can to help someone who's been bereaved or has suffered this incredible loss, isn't it? I mean, it's not going to necessarily, it's just really to recognise what they've been through, to recognise that they've lost, and it is again dependent on the woman, that they've lost their baby.
That's it, exactly. It's about opening and starting those conversations. It's about being able to say to a family, not just the mothers, but also the fathers, how are you? We know that you have lost your little baby. We are sorry that you have lost your little one. How can we help? Where can we be there for you as such? Now, SANS do have a number of support groups that actually across Northern Ireland that are available for anyone who has experienced pregnancy loss. And actually, just to let you know that actually in the first 24 hours, over 1,800 certificates were applied for, you know, and I'm quite sure that as the, you know, word spreads, that number will increase, rapidly as such. So just if you're looking to apply, if you're thinking about applying, please click on the link, please read the guidance documents. And if you have any problems at all, please get in contact with one of the charitable organisations, be it SANS or the Miscarriage UK as such, to help.
Yeah, because even in going through the process of applying for this certificate, they might require that help. It might be distressing for them.
That's it. We have ensured that throughout the scheme, throughout the application form, you will be directed if you feel that this process is triggering. There is a link there directly to the Bereaved NI website, which is a website within Northern Ireland that actually gives you all of the collective information for all of the support charities that are there. Mm-hmm. The scheme, the application form, is I've been through it as such. It's very simple. It's easy to follow. There is a guidance document there as well too. So hopefully people won't have too much difficulties navigating that.
Yeah. And again, because it is about choice, it would be lovely to see this available to everyone on the island. So hopefully there are people pushing that in the Republic. Melissa, thank you very much. Thank you very much for your time. Look for
no problem. Thank you so much for having me.
Bye bye. Look after yourself. Right. 086 60 25,000. Is that something that you would like to see in the Republic? I think, and it seems to be well thought out, because obviously, you know, both parents, whether they're together or separated, you know, might have different approaches to this. So you can apply for a cert in the North for baby losses where the parent details are different by making a separate application for each. Now, if you want both parents' names to be included on the certificate, you need the consent of the second parent as well. But it means you can do this yourself if you're content to have only your own name on it. Okay, I think I just feel that's a good idea. I don't think it's going to do any harm. Right, we're going to take a short break. Back with our next... Actually, we won't have to take a couple of comments here. Lettermack Award, speed bumps in Milford is the same. Another, it's always we're reviewing, blah, blah, blah. What's the point of councillors when they don't have any power? Another, Letcher's not a town, it's a village, so will the 30 apply to it? Well, it's in the discussion document, so it is there. You've only to look at the donuts on the road in Lettermack Award to sum up driver behaviour locally, says a listener. Hi, Greg. I know where the man's coming from. As a bus driver trying crossing the road at Lurgy Brack School every day, that's such a gamble. You know, it shouldn't be, but it really feels like a gamble at Lurgy Brack. And there are other schools like that as well. And it shouldn't. We're talking about... Now, the problem, not the problem, perhaps, in terms of time, Lurgy Brack is going to be very much accommodated for when the 10T begins, but that's a long way away. That's a long way away. The bigger issue, believes another listener in that Amok Award, are the motorcyclists at weekend. They're flying through the village at excessive speeds. And another, the verges are all overgrown along the N56 in Lettermack Award from Sweeney Shop to Clerkenshop, making it hard to see traffic exiting minor roads. And whilst obviously you're interested in that local area, we're seeing quite a lot of that right around the county and the region too, of course. Declan Meehan, Councillor Declan Meehan, joins us on the programme now. Good morning, Declan. Thanks for your time. Now, there was a recent regional health forum meeting or whatever they're called now. So what happens is we get sort of like a plethora of information and updates as members like yourself get an opportunity to put questions to the HSC. Of course, a lot of interest in the developments, the plans for Letterkenny University Hospital. And you were able to get an update on delivery timelines or progress in relation to much-needed surgical hubs. And you asked about Letterkenny University Hospital and Sligo University Hospital, Declan.
Yeah, look, I suppose what I want to do, like others, is keep the pressure on and keep people informed about the surgical hub. It was July last year when the announcement was made that both Letterkenny University Hospital and Sligo University Hospital would be getting surgical hubs in the Northwest after, as we know, a protracted and a very hard won campaign. We're a year on, so I suppose it's timely just to look and see where we are with it. The update that was given at yesterday's Regional Health Forum meeting shows that it's a developed design stage and that that will progress after the summer. And by the end of quarter three, so kind of by the time we get to the autumn, we should have more of an idea of the timelines for delivery. And the reason I was kind of asking this question was related to another question I was asking. You know, the reasons that we were pushing so hard for the surgical hub are still there, mainly that surgical lists are cancelled regularly, particularly in the months between October and April, which Sean Murphy from LUH confirmed yesterday at the health forum. And that affects a huge amount of patients who are already waiting a really long time for surgery, for that only then to be cancelled due to overcrowding and surge capacity at the hospital. So the reasons for the surgical hub are underlined. And while we're waiting on that to become a reality, a fixed reality at Letterkenny University Hospital, we need to also push the HSC into what it is that they're doing in the short term and medium term to address those surgical wait times at Letterkenny University Hospital.
Were they able to give you any answer to the latter question in relation to, you know, we can't wait per se or necessarily for these hubs?
Yeah, look, I suppose what they are attempting to do is they're nearly up to a full complement of surgeons under general surgery as an example. So they have had successful recruitment, which is fantastic. I would believe that that is in no doubt linked to the fact that a surgical hub is coming to Letterkenny as one of the reasons for successful recruitment to Letterkenny. The other initiative that they're taking is that they're trying to run as many weekend surgeries and operations as well. And they're prioritising people who were previously postponed or cancelled over the winter months, over the coming months, and hoping to clear that over the remaining months in summer. So they are working hard to try and get through that. The reality is that we do have very long surgical lists at Letterkenny University Hospital. And as I say, we have had people who were pushed back due to surge capacity there between October and April.
Just returning to the hub before we move on, I think, you know, from my reading of the answer given to you, that this is moving at the pace, obviously we'd like it to move quicker, but this is moving at the pace you would expect. You know, it is moving forward. The timelines at this time are being met, and the more concrete information will come at a time when realistically we could have expected it. So it's ongoing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's ongoing. Look, I suppose kind of one of the points of clarification that I sought yesterday was, you know, why is it taking so long? You know, obviously these things take long, capital projects do, but we were told that we should expect a surgical hub within 2 to 3 years. And we're probably looking closer to 3 years than 2 years from the announcement. But one of the complications of the design process, and remember, some of your listeners might remember, Greg, that the surgical hubs are all designed to a universal design used across the country. But the added complication in Letterkenny is that while it will be a separate physical entity, it is going to be in the same building as some of the other things that were announced last year, such as ambulatory care centre, expansion of oncology and new wards. So that just kind of lengthens that process somewhat.
Of course, but in reply to you, they did say, unprompted to some extent, though prompted by the question, every effort will be made to accelerate the delivery of these surgical hubs through standardised exemplary designs and leaning on the knowledge and learnings. Just one point in relation to that, is that a cut and paste job? Do you think they factored in maybe the more complex nature of the design and planning of Letterkenny, or do you believe that they do believe they can speed this up by you know, the standardised exemplar designs, etc.
Look, as you'd want to believe,
I don't think so. I think they've just cut and pasted that in.
The only thing is that, you know, when you look at the surgical hubs that are underway elsewhere in the country, there can only be learning from those as they go through more of them. So hope that that will kind of speed the process up to a certain extent in Letterkenny and Sligo.
Okay,
but the number one thing that we can do as public representatives is keep the pressure on with the HSC. The HSC are now on the same side as us in terms of this project. They want to see this as well. So working together to try and get that over the line as quickly as possible for the benefit of patients in the Northwest.
I'm just curious, because I'm sure there was a reason. Why did you include Sligo in that question? Was it for a colleague in Sligo, or is it to try and get a sense of how these two projects are moving forward, one versus the other?
Yeah, it's the latter, Greg. I find that in the regional health forum, when you're raising questions, it's always good to have a comparison to how things are progressing elsewhere in the West and Northwest.
Agreed, yeah, good idea. Right, now, speaking to dentists, people interested in oral health, it seems the system currently is designed to, you know, facilitate extractions and what have you, rather than the proper care and maintenance of teeth, particularly from a young age. I remember when I was at school a very long time ago, it almost feels like teeth weren't invented, but they were. You know, there was a system in place, and even the health checks, we'd all the lads would go into a room and get checked and all that kind of stuff. I don't really see it happening now. What were you trying to get an answer to? Was this about, you know, the screening program that we believe is there, Declan, but doesn't seem to be working?
Yeah, look, I suppose if you look at the HSC website, Greg, and a number of parents would have contacted me in relation to this actually in recent months, which is why I raised it at the health forum. There used to be screening, and at times there was screening in first, second, fourth and sixth class at primary school. And an awful lot of parents have contacted me saying that their child has not been taken for any screening at any point in primary school, and then they're progressing on into secondary school and outside the system altogether. So in the answer that I received when I asked about it, it showed that only sixth class students are being screened across Donegal, but it didn't give any information on the numbers. And again, asking by comparison and asking how this is done in other counties, we can see a very clear breakdown of the numbers. And most counties are also only being screened for sixth class pupils, with the exception of County Roscommon, which are able to do first and second class pupils as well. So that's where we want to get to. There's obviously not enough resources being put into this by the HSE, or perhaps there's a scarcity of dentists available in order to facilitate that screening. But there wasn't a really complete answer given there.
I think really what it comes down to, though, it is about having the money. The money, you know, the public v private and all that type of stuff. I think it kind of going to come down to that. I think just sixth class is too late. I think you could literally have, you know, six fillings at that age. And as I say, you know, it can be easier to go in under an emergency with your child to get an extraction than it can be to prevent all of this. It's crazy. Okay, I'm sure you're going to look for further information so we can get a better analysis in relation to that. But for now, Declan, thanks for your time. Thanks for covering the couple of topics there. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Greg.
Right, 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. You can give us a call too on 074 91 25,000. The latest edition of the Greg Hughes podcast comes out on Friday. Our guest this week is Diddy McGinley, who was in studio there not so long ago for a chat. An interesting man, many of you would know, but it's an opportunity, I suppose, to get a bit of an understanding as to his career path, how he became a teacher, how he transitioned into politics. There's a lot of controversy, or there has been a lot of controversy, and there always is, in terms of, you know, candidate selection, people stepping down, people coming back. There's an interesting story in there. So that's released for you. And listen, a quick thanks, by the way, for the continued success of the Greg Hughes podcast. It sits alongside this show, and we didn't really know what to expect when we decided to do it, but we had a little bit more time, obviously, because of the schedule changing here. And it's consistently in the top 20 Apple podcasts right across Ireland, by the way, which I don't see any other local radio station in there. So it's a fantastic achievement. It's down to your support, and of course the support of people who have to be listening elsewhere in the country, or it wouldn't be so successful. So you can search the Greg Hughes podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere where you get your podcasts, but of course right here where it's housed at highlandradio.com in the playback section. Now, this coming Friday is your Council Day 2026, and marks the work that councils do, often the unseen work. Everyday stuff, responsibility like housing, roads, planning, libraries, environment services, arts and emergency sports and so on. John McLaughlin is Chief Executive of Donegal County Council and is with me on the programme now. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning to your listeners.
How important is a day like this, I suppose, to broaden out the conversation about the work of local authorities?
Well, look, Greg, yeah, we're always looking for opportunities to, I suppose, showcase the work of our staff and what we do is generally for the community. And it's very easy to get headlines for what doesn't work well and so on. But this is a chance, you know, if you look at Donegal County Council here, we have a budget about $222 million this year in revenue, 1,200 staff, working all over the place in every parish. But we have the 31 councils are doing they do this campaign every year, your Council Day, try and shine a light on some of the work, maybe the lesser seen work as well, and how we engage and how important our work is to citizens, sometimes not even knowing it. You mentioned there the main ones, you know, the people, everyone thinks about housing and roads and so on and planning and water and environment. But then if you look at some of the, for example, control of dogs, important, and breeding and new ones and bully dogs and all that and licensing and so on. We wouldn't ordinarily think that's a council function. Or if you look at maybe Christmas tree recycling, for example, important to the homeowners. But sometimes we just take that for granted. It just gets sorted out. But that has to get done, and we have people working all over. And then very, very important too, the democracy function of councils, and we were told recently we're the linchpin of local democracy. And I believe that, and that's true with our elected members and so on. And every citizen can have their say through the process of council, of course, in terms of election and votes and so on, or prioritising work and so on. And it does make a difference. And eventually things get done that get prioritised. And of course, the funding is always an issue. You know, as how much you have, you need more and so on. But there's a process there, and there's huge engagement across Ireland now in that front. Mm-hmm. And we're a democracy and very open, and people are very active in that space. But this is a chance for us to, and have somebody tell their stories through our social media and so on Friday, and some of the unseen work. And even might mention and we're always looking for new employees now in the council, and a wide range of jobs in the council. And we have apprenticeship programs now, in the past, people would have thought of apprenticeship maybe as the craftspeople, electricians, carpenters, so on. But now you can almost do an apprenticeship for any career, and that's taking off across the country as well.
What kind of, how many vacancies would there be at the moment? Not an exact figure, John, but ballpark.
Oh, well, any day you could say we have between 60 and 100 vacancies.
Wow. Okay. So
generally across
there.
The sector, you could say 5-6% speaking anyway, just been in natural retirement and so on.
Yeah.
But in particular areas, we're finding it hard to get recruitment. You know, it's just, I suppose it's good for employees.
But that being said, check out the social media channels of the council, because there could be opportunities there that you didn't know. Just in terms of the work of different local authorities across the country, I presume it can be more challenging or less challenging dependent on, you know, the social sort of financial setup of the people, how wide or broad the county is. You know, where does Donegal rank in terms of that? Do you know, I mean, obviously we have one of the lowest disposable incomes, but we still require services. In terms of planning, the rural planning issue is always up for debate, and the government's working in relation to that. But our roads, we've tons of roads, right, across a massive, massive county, even just a part of our county, and Shown is the size of another county. So are those elements of running a county that we perhaps as regular Joes might not understand?
Well, yeah, Greg, and also I wouldn't say it's regular Joes on our understanding. You know, I think just that some of it you have to deal with the facts and the situation. Some of that works in our favour. You mentioned roads. Now, roads money generally across the country is divided out based on road mileage for maintenance, for example. So counties with a high mileage, and if you have lower traffic, they tend to do better actually per mile. Or if you're in the immediate periphery of Dublin, you know, you can see, and that actually shows when you're driving those roads. However, for the main infrastructure, and you know, if you're talking about like the Dublin to Derry and Letterkenny link, we're very far behind there. We haven't got that, and that's not about proportion miles or any of that. You know, it's a much harder sell for us. And I'll just give an example. We were in Belfast yesterday, digressing, and Stormont with Derry Strabane and ourselves up with 7 people in the room, 4 Northern Ireland ministers. And we're doing the same now in Dublin in October. And, you know, it's nice to see that for the entire Northwest region, to try and give us the lift we need and get that investment, and to align government policies and frameworks to allow us to get the investment we need. We can do the rest if we get that aligned.
Okay, so people have an opportunity to find out a little bit more about the work of the council. The council is of the people. Listen, there's 1,200 people employed there, so there's not a family listening, I would imagine, that doesn't have someone work within the council or connected to it, so they'll know themselves. But for everybody else, you can check out all of the county council's social media channels and use the hashtags Your Council Day as well as Dulla Sa Gheirla. Isn't that right?
Sounds close enough, Greg.
We'll settle on that, all right.
Yes.
John, look after yourself. Thanks for the time.
Thank you, Greg.
And I'm sure we'll speak again in the not-too-distant future. John McLaughlin, the CEO of Donegal County Council there. In relation to the baby loss certificates, which can now be obtained in Northern Ireland, a caller says, my heart is in fire to be able to now apply for a baby loss certificate, and it's backdated to 1992 for all our babies born lost before 24 weeks. This is the best news I've heard in ages. Now, if you're listening in the Republic, unfortunately, unless you lived in Northern Ireland or your baby was lost in Northern Ireland, you can't apply for them in the Republic yet. But I think maybe this is an opportunity and we can drive it out here. I think there'd be a huge appetite for that here in the Republic of Ireland as well. I think there is a facility for registering stillborns here in the Republic of Ireland. Well, let me double check that, because if there is, I think it's no harm getting that information out there as well. On the issue of sort of dental care for young people, we were talking there to Declan Meehan, councillor, in relation to that. My daughter is now leaving national school and wasn't seen once by the school dentist. She needs a brace, and I've been told that it is now deemed cosmetic and I'd have to pay privately for it. Going into secondary school is too late for dental work, I would agree. And why in Roscommon do they get seen in first, second and sixth year, but not here in Donegal? And we don't want to take anything away from Roscommon, but, you know, we should have equal care for our children, shouldn't we? How much money is being spent on travel for dentists? You could get a dentist working in Carndonagh but living in Letterkenny. They would get an allowance to travel and fuel costs. Is this something that could be checked via the Freedom of Information? I'm sure it can, and anyone can do that, of course. We're joined in studio now by Councillor Paul Canning, Cathaoirleach of Donegal County Council, and we've just spoken to John McLaughlin. Part of me feels like this is an important conversation, Paul, and part of me feels like Caroline's chucked you under the bus here.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. Thanks.
Because
Greg,
we're going to be talking about how busy you are, right?
Yeah.
And some people understand that, and others will say, are you having a laugh? But yeah, I've got your diary here, and I have to say, it's been one busy year.
Yeah, it had been about a year with meetings and everything that goes. And a lot of stuff, like, as John alluded to there beforehand, is we do a lot of unseen work with meetings, etc. And they have to be done because of legislation. You have to cross your T's and dot your I's. And we have to come at a lot of financial arrangements from a long way back, and you're on a process. You don't see the end result till you actually 3 or 4 years down the track, and that can be disappointing at times.
When you look through your diary of what you've had to do, it's either, I mean, in some days there's one or two functions. There's certainly one every other day, even in the quiet months. It is go, 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 as Cathaoirleach. Like, it's a great honour, but my word, you're giving up a lot of your own time.
You do, and I didn't realise the amount of time that you do give up. You give up a lot of your own time. There is, you get up in the morning, you're suited and booted, you know, and that's you for the full week. There's always something you have to go. And because of the size of this county, you could be in Killybegs, you know, this morning, and then maybe trying to get back for a function at night. And in particular there, last week we had a situation where we were the launching of the two fire tenders. You had one in Cairndona at 10:30. And you had one in Bundoran at 2:30.
Mm.
That was the same day within the same county. So when you're travelling from Manor Cunningham, you go to Cairn, then head to Bundoran, then back to Manor Cunningham. It's, you know, it's a long trip.
And I'm not saying for a moment that you would want to avoid any of these engagements, but the reality is you can't really refuse.
You can't really refuse. You have a lot of MD chair people. You know what I mean? That takes over, but for some reason, and even with the deputy, which was Donald Mandy Kelly, and thank him for pulling me out of time, but when people see a situation where you can't be there and say, well, I'm going to send my deputy, they say, no, she will change to suit your date.
Yeah, I get
you. Know,
you.
And it's not my personality, it's a chain.
Yeah, but that's going to say that's a sign of respect for the office.
Respect
to,
for the office, yeah. Yeah, it's
which
respect
is good
for the
to see.
That is, yeah, it's good. And listen, everybody deserves to be the respect given back to them as well, you know. So from that perspective, you try to work with everybody, but sometimes it just doesn't work out because you have situations where you could have your week planned, and then all of a sudden, on a Wednesday, we're told there's a minister coming here on Friday. Whatever you have to do on Friday, cancel, and you go after the minister. And we have to do that. That's part of the process. It's the democratic process that we're involved in.
Yeah, so well as opening a whether it could be opening a Wayne's World or whatever it might be, opening a section of it in Bundoran to the council meetings, to minister, meeting with the ministers, Jack Chambers 4 times, Dara O'Brien 2 times, Micheál Martin 3 times, James Brown 4 times, Dara Cleary 3 times. You know, I mean, you're not necessarily walking out of those meetings, you know, with a blank cheque or what have you. But it is all part of democracy and the process of trying to get as much as we can for the county. And sometimes you are playing the long game.
You're playing the long game. The advantage, a lot of those meetings, you know, you'd always say about the wee private meetings, but a lot of those meetings is part of a Fianna Fáil delegation where we have access to ministers. And there's no point beating about the bush. And the team at the top, Donegal County Council team at the top, knows as well that the likes of a Fianna Fáil councillor has easier access to a Fianna Fáil minister.
At the moment, because Fianna Fáil happened to be
correct.
In Power National.
And Fan Gael, yeah, the same. Mm. You know, and we've seen it even yesterday when we were up in Stormont. The Sinn Féin councillors in the north had more access to the First Minister than we did. But that's part of the way the game's played, you know.
How big of an element, you mentioned going into the north yesterday, and as we heard from John McLaughlin, Derry Strabane were represented there. How much is cross-border going on that we don't really know about? You know what I mean? Like, how much, how important is that? How much of the work is with a cross-border focus, you know, where applicable?
There's a lot goes on. There's a lot goes on there, Greg. And you see yesterday, just because it's so frequent to us or so close to us, we were in Stormont yesterday, and you had Michelle O'Neill. So you had the First Minister, and you had the Deputy First Minister, you had the Minister for Health, and you had the Minister for the Economy, along with other ministers. But we had at that meeting, like, you had myself and you had Kieran Brogan, Councillor Kieran Brogan. You also had Caroline Sweeney from the Chamber, the Letterkenny Chamber. You had Tony Forrester from the Letterkenny Chamber. You had Paul Hannigan from the ATU. You had Dermot Monaghan from the Health side. And you had council staff there. So we had that. There was 70-odd people in the room, and we were meeting with those men. We're meeting at a regular basis with that cross-border group, with that whole collaboration. And we need Derry City status, but Derry City status needs Donegal as well for its hinterland and everything. So we are working as a unit, and we're trying. Like, and the conversation the health minister said yesterday, he said yesterday about to break down the barriers, that people that needs to go to Alton and Galvin, it should be easier than it is today. And they are working with it, you know what I mean? And that's where we're at.
Do you know what I think about the whole cross-border thing and seeing us as a city region? Is I think, you know, business would be on board with that. I think politicians who are at these meetings get it. I actually don't think there's a huge public buy-in to that.
No, but you'll discover that the public buy-in as little, you know, as less than a lot of these things that we do, you know, that they say, oh, no, that's not, I'm not that, you know, I shouldn't be involved in that, or I should not be involved in. And that's across the board, even in the county, where we give it out a lot of Peace Plus money this year. The buy-in sometimes from the small towns, you'll get the committees coming to the events, and you'll get, but the general buy-in, people get up in the morning, they go, they do their work,
too
they
busy don't want to be things.
One of the big things is
the foreign trip out to America. It's not as controversial now as it used to be, because I think there was a reform, I think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, and I can't timeline it, but the amount of people going from the council seemed to reduce, but also to the itinerary and a report became available after the fact as well, so people could look down and see what was actually done, because there was a information vacuum there, so people just presumed everyone was off on their jollies, right? So having been on that trip as Cathaoirleach, how would you frame it? How busy is it, ETC? How much downtime is there? You know, is it a 10-day party?
Well, I'll give you an indication, and you know my good wife Stephanie as much as I do, you know what I mean? And when Stephanie's in my itinerary, she says, no, I'm not going, you know? And that tells you in your own words, you know? No, she didn't go.
Right, okay.
She said, because we were kicking off we had to be up at 6:30 in the morning to do items, and you were the whole day through, and you had to meet people, you know, and it was meeting and greeting, and people were asking questions, you know, the diaspora. There's a great diaspora there. We landed in Philadelphia, and the next on the Friday the next day we had the parade in Philadelphia. The next day then we had to go to New York to be up for the parade on St. Patrick's Day, and then we had two functions after that, and we had to come back to Philadelphia for the diaspora event. But I just to give you an indication on St. Patrick's Day itself, when we were in New York, right? Stephanie and Vanessa, they were sending me videos. I know the time difference and all that, like, but I'll be honest with you, Greg, on St. Patrick's Day, it was after 6 o'clock before I got my first pint. That wouldn't happen here, you know what I mean? Like, you know, I'd be having my last pint probably at 6 o'clock, you know what I mean? Yeah, so that, and it is flat out, you're flat out
no,
when
I
you're
do
meeting
understand
people.
That. And what do you think? Again, it's like meeting with ministers. You're not coming back per se with, you know, we've secured this package or this is happening. In those visits, in those meetings, in that engaging with diaspora, or even sort of, I suppose it's a two-way thing now, you have to sort of emphasise to people over there the contribution that we're making because of threats of tariffs and all that type of stuff. But what do you think comes from those meetings? And I don't mean I'm not looking for facts and figures. Is it you know, strengthening ties? Is it investment? Is it maybe encouraging business leaders that Donegal's changed? You can come home now. We've got good broadband for the most part. Like, what are you doing in that 10 days, do you think?
And in relation to the foreign troops meeting the diaspora and all that, you're keeping ties, you're linking ties a lot, you know, and you're meeting people. And there is people then asking about A, B and C, about investment and about where's good, what's happening. And we were selling our workforce because of our education here and where we're at regarding a workforce, that we are well equipped. And we were selling that end of it, and there was people there making presentations, and it was absolutely fantastic, the presentations, you know. But we also had the likes of Katrina Jennings out there giving her story about how she started and where she's at, and told that ordinary story as well. Mm. In relation to meeting,
you want to hear the story I'd tell over there?
I can imagine.
No, I would sell this county. So
would you? Well, why would you go over?
Because no one will invite me. I'm not Eric Roberts. I can't get the council to invest in me, like, you know.
But you just were over for the diaspora.
I was told I was too old.
You were over for the diaspora event.
I was told I was too old to influence.
You know what I mean? I'll refrain from answering that one. But regarding ministers,
yeah,
a lot of the time we take for granted that the minister knows what our issue is.
Mm.
We automatically think, well, you know this. They don't, until we actually get them into a room and you meet them face to face.
I think that's why it was so important, the 100% redress party going down. I know they're a different party to yours, but we were speaking to Joy Bird briefly before that. It isn't you do need to be able to vocalise and demonstrate what you're talking about, because people have preconceived notions of it. So what you're doing and what you're talking about over there is in different spaces. But the more engagement we have,
without a doubt,
in their backyard, the better.
We attend. You know, there were times when I was in the chair, the council there, and I thought I should have been a postman. The amount of letters I had to send to Dublin. You know what I mean? So I think sometimes a letter gets to departments and it's answered.
If
you go down and you meet them and say, listen, this is this and this is that, and you say, oh, I get it. So we do need to keep meeting with the ministers.
And there is this sense that, and we've heard it before, and to be honest, it could be, I still think, no matter what you're about to say, there is an element of it that there's a sort of a permanent government that are making the calls. But you're of the view, are you, that ministers perhaps have more influence than people might imagine in decision-making, allocations, direction of funding or policy or what have you?
Yeah, they have more. They do have more power than, you know, we always say, oh, well, the civil servant. That's the same civil servant this last 20, 30 years. Doesn't matter what government's in power, you know. But we, you know, we have seen that there is influence that ministers, and especially the Taoiseach, can make a difference.
If you give him
the right information, and it is a worthwhile project.
Practically, you talked about the amount of miles that you cover, you know, And you want to be at every function you possibly can. There's a practical safety element to that too, if you're driving yourself, right? And maybe there are times you might say to someone, look, I'm absolutely exhausted. Will you drive me down to this function in Brooklis and drive back? But you have said, and again, you know, perhaps it's not going to be popular, but I respect our listeners to understand the reality of things as well, that a driver for the mayor, or the Cathaoirleach in our case, would be advisable. Is that something you'd support for those that follow you, and why?
Yeah, I'll tell you the driver for the mayor, I think, well, you could have a person that can be shared with the mayor, with the county manager, and with maybe somebody else, especially for a Dublin trip.
Mm.
You head down to Dublin to meet a minister, right? The first thing, you land Dublin, you have to go looking for a parking space. You have to get your ticket and all that. And you mightn't get a parking space. You could be half a mile away. And then you have to get organised, meet with a minister, get your notes, get everything sorted. And you might need to be back in Donegal for a function the next morning. That, I think, needs a driver. And the other aspect of I'm compared, because we have so much conversation and so much collaboration with Derry City. I was, myself and Rory McHugh, who was the former mayor of Derry, and he was coming in this big black swanky BMW with a driver. And here I was come like only fools and horses in a wee white van, which give a bad image nearly. You know, you nearly had to park elsewhere. Just
I know
to
what you're saying, yeah.
So there's a few wee things we need to look at there just to try and up the game.
Yeah, unless you were to take up the position again, it's for future Cahir Locks. There's a lot going on here. If we ever eventually get the 10T over the line, you know, maybe we're starting to see Irish Water have some level of success in terms of some of the big issues. There's always work to do. My word, we've had water restrictions in Ballybofey-Stranola because it hasn't rained for a day. But anyway, and we have been laggards, not just us, but local authorities generally, I think, in terms of building social housing. But what we are seeing now is plans. We're seeing diggers on the ground and plans coming through in different areas. We're never going to have enough, right? But do you believe, and I almost am going to have to take out defective concrete blocks for the purpose of this question, because that's such a big issue that it makes everything else seem completely tiny, right? But, and I'll come back to DCB in a second, but in terms of the social housing build, progress of the 10T, you know, water infrastructure improving, perhaps not as quickly as we like, but we are. Do you think we're in an upward curve in terms of the county?
Very much so. There was major investment from the Department for Irish Water. And even in the last conversation we had with Jack Chambers, he was sort of disappointed that there are still a few issues with Irish Water in regarding the build. In relation to our own build, like we have 300 houses completed. We have 600 on site, and I think we have 300 in planning, and we have also 300 at a project. That's the figures from
To service the housing waiting list.
They're to service the housing waiting list, you know, and then they'll open the other door where the first people to get on that list are the HAP people, and then they pick up and it keeps moving and keep moving.
They might move out of private rented accommodation.
But at least we are in a situation where we're creating a link with contractors, and we could keep that going and keep that process going. And there is teams within Donegal County Council that are staying ahead of those contractors for 5 years down the track and say, well, this is your next project and this is your next project, and try and keep that momentum going. So I think the housing is working.
Yeah, but our biggest challenge is going to be defective concrete blocks. We heard from 100% Redress down in Dublin yesterday talking about this could be on a scale that many people don't realise. Padraig McLaughlin's about to speak in the Dáil to make that very point that this could just be, you know, 20,000 houses, you know, multi billions. There is a scheme in there. We do need that to continue to be enhanced, and you know, to get people out of their horrible houses through no fault of their own and into safe houses into the future.
Yeah, there's a lot of scenarios goes on with the defective concrete blocks, and I'm caught in the uncomfortable place of wearing two or three hats in this game. But the situation with the defective concrete blocks, the people at the top that is given out the grant, for a better, it's a remediation grant, right? That's the first thing that we have to get into our head, or people have to get in. It's a remediation grant. And you then get into a situation and say, well, I have a house, 2,000 square foot house here. The money that the grant is giving you will remediate that house to what you have sitting on the site, right? That what happens is, then we'll say, well, listen, we'll upgrade the house here, we'll put in the triple glazing, we'll put in the air-to-water system, the geothermal system, we'll put in the heat recovery system, we'll put in these. All of a sudden, they add 80,000.
That's going to be seen as a controversial remark there, Paul.
I know it is.
Really what you're implying is the shortfall is because people want bells and whistles.
Yes, but no, we're not saying bells and whistles. They're just trying to get their house to a standard, because as you and I know, we say, well, we might as well do it right when we are doing it. And that is where at times people, you know, say to yourself, right, we'll go for it. And then they get knocked back. And that's where it happens. We have to get to a situation where...
But you seem to be implying that if people replace like for like, and you use the example of a 2,000 square foot as you seem to be implying that the grant, the remediation grant, is sufficient.
Yes, it does. All day long.
But I mean, obviously, if what you were saying were true, penalty-free downsizing would have been the obvious.
Well, downsizing with the penalty won't work. What would have worked, and what I had agreed with, what was an agreement with, was the slide rule effect. You know, but they done away. You know, because I was always of the it's difficult. 1,000 square foot house and 2,000 square foot house has the same doors, has the same bathroom, has the same sink, has the same toilet, has the same all the expensive stuff in it.
Mm.
It's just the blocks that you're adding. So there should have been a sliding scale, should have been allowed to stay.
You've met now with James Brown 3 times. You've met with Dara O'Brien 2 times. I'm not sure how many of those Dara O'Brien was the housing minister in. I'd just be curious to know, did you say it to them, or do you believe that they believe that much of the shortfalls we're seeing in this remediation scheme is because people are trying to, they've got one go at it and they're trying to build a better house than they're moving out of? Because if that's a national opinion, Paul, and that could be guiding decision making, it's going to be troubling for some listening this morning.
Yeah, I'll tell you where I see it. I would be of the opinion that the department, you know, and this is just my opinion, the department, I think, is having discussions with the lending agencies, right? The bank managers and all of that, because there are situations out there where there's young people that are building their houses, and they're building the 2,000 square foot house, and they're building it for X amount, and the mortgage, the whatever bank is saying, well, we're giving a mortgage here for that. And if there's a regulator or anybody who's saying, well, hold on a second here, what's happening, or what's the discrepancy, or why is there a discrepancy? And
so if you just, I know the point you're making there, and listeners will too. So I'm just saying, have you said to James Brown, for an example, that, and using the example of a 2,000 square foot home, have you said to James Brown that a lot of the reason you're hearing that people are 60, 70, 80, 90,000 euro short is because they're putting all in sort of the modern stuff, layer to water and all that kind of stuff, and if they just built the same house that they're moving out of, the grant would be enough? Like, have you said that to him?
No, but he already knows it.
So that's his belief as well.
The people that's advising them, the people that does the pricing. So they're advising them the cost of this and cost of that and cost of that, and he sees it, right? And then he says, "Well, hold on a second here. What, you know, we have to look at this." And that's what's going to, that is what they will be looking at. And I know it's not what people want to hear, but that is the remediation scheme.
It is, and I don't want to overstate it, and maybe I am overstating it, but that feels to me a little bit like a revelation. If we're here talking daily about, you know, people being 60, 70, 80,000 euro short, and the Cathaoirleach of the council and the minister believes that the majority of that is down to putting in air to water, triple glazing, this, that and then, that's going to come as a bit of a surprise to some people.
We'll see.
As I say, I could be misreading it. I haven't had my breakfast yet, and my brain's not working fantastic. Just to finish, by the way, on your year, it is a huge personal sacrifice. I get that. But also, you know, it's like anything, right? You're not the only person making the sacrifice. Your family have to sort of accept that for a year you're going to be absent. How important for you and for previous and future Cathaoirleach is the support of family in that regard?
Oh, definitely. They need to be very easygoing.
Name them, Paul, please. If you want dinner on the table, just blum in names.
Right. Stephanie, my darling wife, Stephanie, and my darling daughter, Vanessa.
I didn't drag that out of them kicking and screaming.
I want to thank them for the support that they have given me through the year. They have been very patient with me. In fairness, the problem, you have to have the shirts ironed and the suits. At least I think it's probably easier to be a Cahillia as a man than a woman, because a woman would have to change her outfit. You know yourself how it, like, I'll get away with a black suit for 10 weddings. Yeah, you know?
I know what you're saying. So that's, change that's the tie.
Yeah, change the tie, you know.
All right, then. So listen, is it a role you take up again?
As mayor? Yeah. No.
It's a one and done job.
One and done, yeah. You never get the opportunity probably again.
I'm just wondering if it ever crossed.
You need to be a full-time
councillor.
If you're a full-time councillor, you have a chance. Okay.
Yeah, and okay. I could keep going on and on and on for ages. We'll talk again. Paul Canning, Cahirlach of Donegal County Council. When is your tenure officially over?
Monday,
okay. Listen, thanks so much for calling in. I really appreciate it. Much hotter down south, 28, 26, 25 degrees along the south coast. Still, though, quite manageable. But for some reason, Paul McLaughlin, gardener at Ballacdur Garden Centre, 25 degrees in Lanzarote can feel very different to a 25 degrees here. It's quite bizarre, actually.
Very much so. But suppose then again, probably you look at it over in Lanzarote, you're lying by a pool and you're...
That's quite right.
Whereas now you're going to make your daily life, if you know what I mean. But now it does seem strange, all right, that the heat can be so different.
We've already reached the longest day. What does that mean for the garden? Gardener, is it a milestone? It's like a day of celebration for you or something?
The longest day it became sort of after the Christians came along, it became St. John's Day. It was always a very important day in the gardening calendar.
Yeah.
So it was, I suppose, sort of marks the start of harvest almost. Like a lot of stuff, like your summer fruits are pretty much getting there. These days the potatoes are just starting to come in, and that you see the trailers starting to appear along the road and stuff like that. So the crops are, it's just a time whenever the harvest is actually coming in. The sort of the hungry months of the spring are kind of past, and from now on you just know that stuff's all coming into abundance.
Yeah, exactly. And there's lots of stuff about, and I suppose too, we're inheriting that, you know, there's stuff always in the supermarkets, right?
Yes.
But if you go back, and it's not hundreds and hundreds of years ago, but this would have been just the bumper time to between, as you say, you know, veg, spuds, everything else coming ripe.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like if you think about it, going back a few years ago, everybody sort of, they were sick of the older stored potatoes, if you know what I mean. It's also a very exciting time when the new spuds were coming out, and like people were going around with sore bellies from eating too many of them just because of the sheer excitement.
I saw a couple of posts up on Facebook of people lighting mini bonfires yesterday. And that's not a coincidence. It's St. John's Eve?
St. John's Eve's traditional bonfire
night. That yesterday or today?
That was last night.
That would explain it. So
I'm sure the firemen wouldn't have been wild about the bonfires last night.
No, but sure, look, so it's...
But traditionally, like, especially in Donegal, around the coast there, around the island, though it would still go on, it's probably kind of died off a lot of places, you know. But it used to be people would lit fires to celebrate the longest day. Then it became St. John's Eve. And the ashes out of the fire were actually spread on the garden. Uses sort of a magic fertilizer almost, that St. John would protect your crops and stuff like that. And even in later times, they reckon the ashes worked against potato blight.
Okay.
Which in the 1840s maybe didn't work so much.
Well, there you go. But you never know. There's always some logic to it. And, we talked about the abundance that's around now. And I'm thinking of people that were asking questions last summer or towards the end of the season, planning for this year. And for a lot of them, things are coming to fruition now, aren't they? I'm thinking about herbs and other stuff that can be harvested now.
Yes, absolutely. So now really is an exciting time in the garden. And probably this kind of weather as well. It's actually nice to sit back and just take
some
of
the
time.
I remember walking along the road as a kid and, you know, just picking fruit off the tree, off the hedgerow.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it was this time of year. And neighbours, I can recall neighbours having fruit gardens and stuff. You know,
yes.
I'm not saying that this is posh stuff, just literally lines of gooseberries or plums or whatever it was. I can't remember exactly. Don't seem to see that as much anymore. Nothing's changed though, has it?
Absolutely nothing's changed. And it's funny actually, it sort of, maybe 10 years ago, had really sort of died out of fashion. We would stock all the fruit bushes, the gooseberries, the red currants, black currants, that sort of stuff, and there was no real demand on them. But for the last 3-4 years, there actually seems to be a good demand on them again.
Okay.
People are maybe getting back into it, because they really are the simplest plants in the world to grow.
Maybe this is a question more for Angus than you. Also, I recall on a day like today, I would drive to Donegal Town and back, and my car and windscreen will be covered in dead animals, dead flies.
Yes.
it doesn't seem to happen anymore.
It doesn't seem to happen anymore as much now. Whether just I think there is sort of pressure on pollinating insects that there's just not as many about as used to be.
Yeah, like so. You, the front of the car would be like a. Yeah, all right. What should we be doing in the garden? It's maintenance, really, isn't it? It's giving everything air and air and space to breathe and deadheading and all that kind of stuff. It's really just to maintain the beauty that's there.
Pretty much it is. Now, there's a time of maintenance that most of the work should be done. Still, if you can get them, there's still time to plant a wee lock of flowers if you're under pressure that way. But you're deadheading and supposed to this kind of weather here, watering is the main one.
Mm, yeah.
So it is.
The fella that used to cut our lawn, I'm not going to lie to you, a bit of an a-hole. We sacked him.
Right.
Just gave him the run and got a robot lawnmower.
Right.
I have to say, fantastic.
Yes, robot.
I called the lawnmower Martin, just in as a mark of respect to the fella that used to cut the grass.
Right.
It's amazing how you don't dump the grass; it just sprinkles it. Yeah. You never see it, and the lawn's all green.
Yeah, pretty much.
Now, it's not a lawn, but you know, it's astonishing.
I suppose that's the fact that the robot's cutting it so little and often.
Yeah,
the grass, there's taking that little grass off that it sort of almost liquidizes it as it blends it or as it cuts it off, you know what I mean? So now they really do seem to be the way forward. Like people are pressed for time, and to be honest, some people like cutting grass, other people see it as very much a chore.
Yeah, I got this one on a sale, and it has the Lunar or whatever it is technology. In other words, you don't have to put a wire around the boundary.
Oh, it's all GPS.
Yeah, well, no, it's not GPS. It's like the same mapping they use for robot vacuum cleaners.
Oh, right.
And, you know, it doesn't need GPS. It doesn't need the wire around. Mm-hmm. And, you know, really, really, really fantastic stuff.
I see from in people's gardens, it seems to be becoming really popular now. Mm.
Right. Quick fire question. Slugs are driving me mad. On the wall and garden, how do I get rid of them?
Probably the most effective, handy way is using organic pellets.
Okay.
Would be. It's just, there are, if you Google it, there are plenty of natural remedies. But the organic pellets now, they're not like the old poisonous ones that would have killed wildlife. So they're safe to use.
If I deadhead my roses now, will they still come back?
Yes.
Absolutely. And are they asking, will they come back this year?
They will. Okay. No, they'll keep producing flowers as you keep going.
Just retired. I'm not much of a gardener, but thinking of creating a polytunnel. Are they expensive? And what advice would you give a first-time novice on what to grow? I mean, they're in for a treat, aren't they?
Yes,
they're going to love it.
Now, polytunnels are brilliant if you're starting to think growing stuff, even flowers, or even if you're growing vegetables or that. Brilliant and really extends the season for you and takes the chance out of it. Pretty much you have a controlled environment you can work in. In terms of expense, you can get them from very little to a lot. If you know what I mean, do your research, sort of look at your site.
How important is positioning? And I'm thinking, obviously, right, if you can avoid the prevailing wind, great. But do you want to get as much natural sunlight as possible?
Well, there's a balance there.
Okay.
You want plenty of light and you want a good bit of light, but sort of the same year you don't want too much.
Right, you don't want to bake them either.
Exactly, because we've once in there, they'll be over 40 degrees today.
Okay.
So they would be. Just like I say, do your research. And polytunnels vary hugely in price, but quality varies hugely as well.
The daffodils were getting on my nerves, so I cut them back, and now I'm beginning to panic as to whether I was too ruthless. Will they grow next year again? Well, the problem, because I listened to you, is they've cut the fertiliser for next year, right?
Yes.
So they're going to have to add fertiliser, but they will be back.
They will be back. Add fertiliser if you're in any doubt. If you've left it this long, chances are they had done the work anyway. So I wouldn't panic too much.
We have a family wedding in August. I was going to get two flower pots for the front door. What do you recommend would be in bloom at that time?
Pretty much any year, summer bedding's going to be there. But if you're looking for pots, I would say get at it fairly soon because the availability won't be great from now on. But anything petunia based, you'll be flying.
Last one, I've removed 2 to 3 weeds or 2/3 of weeds from our garden. It's left large holes. Will the grass grow over it, or do I need to plant seeds again? They can make a little dig out a little bit and make a little mixture of sand and topsoil and put some seed through it and pack it down, can't they?
Yeah, pretty much. I'd sort of level it up again with soil or a mixture of sand, soil and compost, and reseed it, because if you don't reseed it, the weeds will recolonise before the grass will.
Thank you so much, Paul. Lovely to see you again. We'll have you back up really soon. Any questions we didn't get to, we'll carry them over.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Paul McLaughlin, gardener at Ballardur Garden Centre Mountain Top, and podcaster too. Give us the name of your podcast. I know it's been pretty popular.
Yes, Donegal Lesser Known Tales. That's history thing, nothing to do with gardening.
No, but just say Donegal Lesser Known Tales.
Yes, as TikTok guy, just for a wee history videos.
Happy days. Okay, check it out. Well, right, we're back with you tomorrow morning at 9.